Welcome this week, baseball family. We are going to talk about some free agency movement, the Negro Leagues tribute game, and an interview with author Patrick Montgomery right now.
Nine Plus Us presents the Baseball Together podcast with your hosts, Blackjack Brad and Kansas City Little Big Briggy Blue Eyes. And now, Baseball Together.
Welcome, baseball family. We are super excited to be here with you tonight because we are excited about the conversation that we got to have and get to have with you tonight. But the interview that we did, which is coming up at the end of the episode, is bangarang. But first, we must ask the important questions. Brad, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Brig, how are you today?
I'm okay. I'm playing hurt. First softball practice of the season.
You're banging you up.
I'm out there with my first base glove, so I don't have to move very far. Yeah. I'm like, I got it.
It's like the first day of spring training for you out there.
Ooh, I'm telling you, I needed to report when pitchers and catchers did, because this was a whole new experience.
I believe you.
It was really fun, though. The kids are learning very quickly, and we have a lot more talent for an 8U team than I expected, to be honest with you.
That's great.
Yeah, there are some real parental involvement going on, which is very obvious and super
game changer. Big time.
Yeah, it is. I love it. Okay, we're going to start a monthly newsletter, baseball family. So before we get going too much, we need to let you know about that. At the start of this season, we're going to start a monthly newsletter. You're going to get short snippets where each of us, Brad, it's underlined, each of us, because I'm going to participate. Each of us are going to share some of additional thoughts that we have about the topics that we discuss on the show, the topics we discuss Thursday nights during the season. And we're also going to give you a sneak peek on stuff that's to come on the show. We're going to feature some of our partners, and we promise not to bombard you with too many emails, and certainly there won't be useless information. So click the link in the description and we jump on our list so that we can get you in and involved. That's also a place we'll be doing giveaways and things like that if you need an additional incentive. And we have some cool giveaways planned. So jump in there and get on it. Okay, public service announcement. Spring training games are in full swing. We're about halfway through spring training. I think it's safe to say we are halfway through.
Yet. We're almost there.
It's close.
And don't
it's
say that close. Yet, Brig. I don't want it to be over. I still have a lot of games to go to.
I'm before. So ready for the season to start.
Dude, check this out. Did I tell you? So this week, I'm going to four games this week.
Yeah.
Going to one the That's next awesome. Week. Yeah. And then two the week after that.
Woo. You're just better than Dude. Everybody else, aren't you there, Brad?
Well, you know, sometimes. I will have.
By virtue of your location.
I will have. I'll have a strong opening day tan. Let's say that.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for that.
Dude, I took my work day on my front porch today. It was a clean 55 up into the 60s by like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Nice.
I don't know where it came from, but I enjoyed every moment of it.
Yeah, I bet you did. Bet you did. It was awesome.
Baseball family, your public service announcement continues by letting you know that opening day is only 23 days away. 23. Now, Brad's excited about spring training games. I can't wait for opening day. I know can't either. I'm just raising
It's the first step. It's the first step along the way. Once I get through the spring training games, like once I've gone to all those games, then now I'm ready to go.
You'd be jonesing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm jonesing a little bit right now. But the storylines. Oh, excuse me. The storylines have already begun. And there's a bromance in the New York Yankees situation. Apparently, Aaron Judge and Juan Soto are tight, like to a dish. Have you not heard this?
I have. You know, I saw something that a bunch of Yankee fans were like, oh, that's it. Lock up Soto. He's a Yankee for life. That's what this means. Yeah. But I didn't know that that's why.
Maybe, but that's what's going
on there in Florida.
Yep, bromantic. It's super cool. And there's other things going on. So let's get into it. Matt Chapman has finally signed a deal to play baseball with a Major League Baseball team. And that's exciting.
It is
for a lot of reasons. Because yeah, Matt Chapman is a premier ball player. Okay.
Still.
And if you're new to baseball, you need to know that Matt Chapman can ball. That dude knows exactly what he's doing. Okay. He signed a 3-year, $54 million deal with the San Francisco Giants. It includes a two player options and this is the third significant signing of the Giants this offseason. And I think this is really important because everybody was really disappointed in them the last couple of seasons.
Well, yeah, especially last year.
Yeah.
Because was it 22 when they won the division by like a game? Great.
Yeah.
And then last year they fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
But then this is the thing is like this offseason, it was kind of like they haven't been making the big splashy moves, right? Yes, they got Jung Hoo Lee, right?
From they the got Jung Hoo Lee. Yeah.
Right. Like it's a big deal, but it's not Ohtani, right?
Correct. Yeah.
They got Jorge Soler. Big nice deal. Move. But nice he's move. He's not Juan Soto.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Slugger, but he's not Juan Soto.
Mm-hmm.
But now they've got Matt Chapman, so it's like, okay, like the sum of their parts here,
yeah,
they're doing something. They got something going on here.
It's the sum of the parts. That's well said. That's exactly how I feel about it. Well, and the problem is, though, I looked and San Francisco is already dealing with a couple of major starting rotation injuries. One of them includes an elbow soreness, which we all know leads eventually and nearly inevitably to Tommy John. Let me just toss one up. I apologize for saying it out loud. Because that's not what I want to see happen, but, you know, sometimes.
And who was that on?
San Francisco. I forget the player's name.
Oh, the player. All right. I'll look it up.
It was one of their two, they've got five starters, and they're down like two of them as of today or something like that. And so we
Keaton
with
Wynn.
Jordan, what?
Oh, Keaton Wynn has a clean bill of health after an elbow scare.
Oh, it's back. It's okay.
Apparently.
That would be huge. Okay, good, good, good. And the reason I bring that up is because there are a couple of really big pitchers on the market, and I am going to say that San Francisco can afford them.
Yeah.
If they're having pitching problems.
So I did see today that their GM, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he said that they're ready to roll with young pitching.
Okay, cool.
That if they have to, they'll roll with it and just see how it goes. And you know what? Sometimes that works out. I felt like the Mariners had to do that last year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had a couple of injuries. Marco Gonzalez went down. So it was like, well, our next guy is Bryce Miller. We're not sure if he's ready, but let's bring him up.
Right.
Six perfect in his debut and then still gets the W, right? Like,
yeah.
And Bryce Miller has been a stud ever since. And then you get another injury. Actually, I think that was Robbie. Anyway, I can't remember the sequence of events, but had a couple pitching injuries and then ended up having to bring in Brian Wu, who got roughed up a little bit. Overall, though, has really, really good stuff. And when he's good, he's untouchable. You know, so it's kind of worked out for him. And at one point, they even had to bring up Emerson Hancock, who pitched a great day. He had a great debut and then had an injury and had to go back down to the minor leagues, you know. But at the same time, though, like you let these guys come up who are ready but have kind of been blocked by having capable starting pitching, probably.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
They're not able to win the spot out of spring training. So they're down in the minor leagues, kind of sitting waiting for an injury or something. This could be an opportunity for these young guys that could come up and prove themselves with the Giants.
I agree. That'd be really cool. Or they go pick up Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell.
They should, honestly.
They should.
But the hard thing, though, is they paid Jung Hoo Lee a lot of money. I think they paid Jorge Soler quite a bit of money, and then now this is not a cheap deal for Matt Chapman. So
no,
I know there's not technically a salary cap, but everybody's got a budget. They got to stick.
Everybody's got a budget.
That's the thing that drives me crazy about this whole thing with Scott Boras. Like, they just have money coming out there. They're just going to go spend it. Like, no, everybody has a budget. Like, even the company I work for has a budget.
Yeah.
The difference is that in, like, the NBA and the NFL, they call it a salary cap.
Right.
But in my day job, they call it a budget.
It's a great oversimplification, but I really liked it.
That's really, man, that's the thing that drives me crazy about free agency, and especially in baseball, is these players are like, just go spend the money. You've got it. It's like, well, no, we don't have bottomless pockets.
It's not that
simple.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the same when people say, just go build a new ballpark. This one's falling apart. What's the problem? It's like, well,
costs a lot of money to buy.
Yeah, there's like 1,200 million hands in that cookie jar right now. Okay. And the city is involved, and sometimes the state is involved, and you know.
Yep.
So, Brad, my question to you is, based on the San Francisco situation and what they've developed, and now that they've signed Matt Chapman, are we seeing something special maybe happening for contender conversation in San Francisco, or is this just kind of static? Is this all going to create some noise?
I don't think they're breaking even. I do think, because they were a little bit better in the second half last year, if I remember right. I think that they'll be better this year than they were last year. I don't think they're going to contend with the Dodgers, because I think the Dodgers are going to run away with the regular season. They're going to be regular season champions again this next year. I don't think they'll win the World Series, but I think they'll be regular season champions. So there's not really any contending with them in the NL West, but I think that they will. I think they'll contend for a wild card spot.
Yeah. Wow! All the way to the wild card.
Okay. All the way. All the way. Mm. Yep. Mm.
So some fun facts about Scott Boras clients, because Matt Chapman's a Scott Boras client. He was asking for anything upwards of $150 million or more. He declined a $100 million offer and signed for $54 million with the Giants. Cody Bellinger, let's continue the roster. Cody Bellinger asked for $200 million or more, signed for 3 years, $80 million with the Cubs. JD Martinez asked for $50 million or more, remains unsigned, and rejected a one-year $14 million deal with San Francisco. Blake Snell is seeking $300 million plus, declined $168 million with the Yankees, and remains unsigned. And Jordan Montgomery continues to ask for $170 million or better, still unsigned. The trend is not looking good for Scotty B clients.
No, it's not. And I think it's just gotten to the point where he's just gotten too greedy with it. Yeah. Right? Like to the point that this is getting to be to the detriment of his clients, of his players.
They're losing out for sure.
Yeah. Like, yeah. If Blake Snell had taken that deal, he would be dealing in spring training right now. He'd be ready to go day one. But instead, what's going to happen is maybe he'll come in ready to go day one, right? Maybe he's doing what he needs to do. I don't know.
Maybe.
But there's something to be said with being in camp, being with your team and ready to go come opening day. Yeah. Jordan Montgomery, same thing. You know?
I agree.
I would honestly, if I was these guys, I'd be getting a little antsy, a little bit upset with my guy.
Oh yeah,
that this is what's going on.
And you know, Scotty B's going, just trust me, baby, just trust me. I got this. I've been doing this a long time. I know what I'm doing.
I know.
But like you said, you called it. Was it a couple weeks ago or something? You said the tide is turning, and it's shifting away from guys playing hardball like Scotty B has, and it's just not worth the squeeze, is what you said.
Yeah.
Here we are. Now we have the data to back up your supposition, and it's all seemingly accurate.
Yeah, I think teams have just gotten to the point where they're not going to be bullied by him.
Right.
You know, they're not going to let him squeeze them for all they're worth. Because I think, and this is the thing, is that I understand it takes money to win, because you got to bring in a difference maker. You've got to bring in a guy like Corey Seager who can get you over the hump come October. I understand that. You gotta have that guy. But at the same time, though, like I don't think Cody Bellinger is that guy. I don't think JD Martinez is that guy anymore. I don't know that Matt Chapman is that guy, because a lot of times that guy is offensive, right?
Right.
You're gonna have a lockdown solid defender at third base, not necessarily a Gold Glover anymore, but you're gonna have a solid third baseman. I should say very, very good. A great third baseman.
I would say
bordering great. On
absolutely terrific. Yeah.
Yes. But I don't think that bat's what it used to be. I don't think that's going to be a difference maker bat come October. So you've got Chapman, Bellinger, Martinez, no longer difference making bats in October. Snell and Montgomery. Montgomery, we saw what he did in October. Right? He's legit. He's a difference maker. Blake Snell, most likely a difference maker still, because he just won a Cy Young. But you know what he also did just now? This last year he led the NL in walks.
Mm-hmm.
Walks kill you in October, because you're playing against teams that can convert. during the regular season, you're not always playing against teams that can convert those walks into runs.
Yep.
So I think that's the big hang up with Snell. It's like, yeah, he just won a Cy Young, but there's a lot of walks there, and we don't like walks.
Nobody likes walks.
Yeah, I hate walks.
Yeah, you hate walks.
Big time.
On the beach, walking the dog.
Like, I prefer to lounge.
Yeah, you do.
but anyway, I think that there is something with every guy, and Boris is trying to get prime money out of these guys, and none of them are in their prime anymore. Maybe Montgomery, possibly Snell, but Snell still has kind of a
control issue there. Or something.
Yeah. Something. So,
well,
anywho.
Continuing on the free agency track, Zach Wheeler signed a 3-year extension with the Phillies. And a 3-year extension is fine. That's great. And I think it's a terrific decision for both parties. But the reason it's noteworthy and the reason we're bringing it up is it's $126 million, which reduces to a $42 million per season average annual value. That begins in 2025 and pushes him through 3 years that way. That is the reason it's interesting is that's the largest contract extension ever based on average annual value.
It's a lot of money.
Because 3 years, 126, you're like, okay, cool. But if you figure it out, you know, per annum, that's a lot of money.
It is. Well, it's funny because you look at 126, you're like, oh, that's actually kind of a deal. Wait, over 3 years? Oh,
yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's where it goes. Yeah. That's where it gets twisted.
That's crazy.
So it's the largest. I mean, you wouldn't think a $126 million deal would be the largest in Major League Baseball history, but if you break it down per annum, then it is. And that I think is fabulous.
Well, he's 33 right now.
I was just going to say that. He's 33. So to me, that's a little risky for an arm at 33.
He'll be 38, right? Yeah. 30. Yep. Or 37.
37, because it'll start in 2025. Yeah, so math is hard and nobody cares. It's fine, Brad.
That's right.
It's fine.
You're right.
So good for everybody, but maybe a little risky on the back end of that for 42 unproductive $1 million for one season. I don't know.
It could just be one of those things where they're doing a solid. They want him to retire a Philly and they're paying him for what he's done.
Maybe, but very few teams do that.
Very few, but it happens.
It does. But where is Joey Votto? Because you'd think
in the car wash.
Yeah, he's sitting in the car wash. He's not playing baseball. He's not.
And refusing to put his carts back, too.
Yeah. We need a cart narc. Somebody go sign Joey Votto. And if we're going to do a sweetheart deal, if we're going to call Zach Wheeler's 3rd year of his extension a sweetheart deal, then where's Joey Votto's sweetheart deal? Come on now.
You could sign him for the veterans minimum, bring him in. And I'm sure if it doesn't work out, he would understand.
He'd be like, all right, I'll just ride the bench, man. I'll ride the pine. And you know what? You kick me out and give that guy my roster spot. I don't care.
I think it's to the point. I think Joey Votto just wants a chance to get in there, get one more at bat.
Yeah.
I think he just wants to go out on his own terms to some degree and be like, okay, that's it. Because so did you hear about this? This is a little bit of a side thing with Joey Votto here, but so he's on Dan Patrick last week and they were talking to him about his last game, how he got tossed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he said
first inning or second inning.
It was early. It was early. And he even said he's like, you can't yell at the umpire from the dugout. He's like, so that was my bad. Right.
Yeah.
But so he's like, the umpire tossed me. He's like, so I ran out there like, hey, this could be my last game. And he's like, then you should know better. Don't yell at me from the dugout. And he's like,
oh man,
you're right. I'm sorry. And he pat him on the shoulder and
I saw that. Yeah. Wow,
like, man, it's a tough way to go out.
That's a really tough way to go.
Yeah. I want him to get one more shot. I really do.
I do
even
too.
If it's just one more at bat so that he can like, or one more game so he can wave, right?
Yeah.
The Reds need to do him a solid.
I agree. It's a crime they haven't already, honestly.
Yep.
It makes no sense to me.
Yep.
I'm angry for Joey Votto. You know what I'm not angry about, Brad?
What's that?
After 13 years, Josh Donaldson is retiring. I'm not angry about this. He's 38 years old, and his bat cleared customs going into Canada, but it never cleared customs coming back.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So, so something's wrong, and it's fine. And
well, you know, he did have a good year in Atlanta. That was a contract year, though. That was a contract
year,
though.
He did, and let's be honest, some of his best years were in Oakland, and I'm pretty sure that's where he'll look most fondly on his
career. I think it'll be Toronto.
It could be Toronto.
I think it'll be Toronto because I think all three of his All-Star years were in Toronto.
Were they? Because, yeah, he was an All-Star 3 years, 2014, 2015, 2016. He was 2015 American League MVP, and he played for 7 different teams. Maybe you're right, but maybe Toronto. So
his first All-Star season was in Oakland, and then he got traded to Toronto, won the MVP in Toronto, and then his second, and then his third All-Star year was in Toronto as well.
But how many years did he play in Oakland?
Like 3.
And how many years did he play in Montreal?
Hold on, pull it up again. Toronto. So he was in Oakland. 2010, he got called up, played 14 games. He's primarily a catcher at that point. Then he came back up in 2012 and played 75 games, had a complete season in 13 and 14 with Oakland, and then got traded to Toronto, played 1, 2, 3 full seasons in Toronto, and then got traded midway through the 2018 season.
Yeah.
So I think you can see, though, that there is somewhat of a trend with Josh Donaldson.
Yeah,
there was a bit of a personality issue, I think.
Oh, this is the thing.
So this is the thing. When he was in Toronto and he was really good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like won an MVP and everything. Like I thought he was I liked him. I was like, dude, this guy's like quirky, and he's really good because those 3 years were as good as anybody.
Totally.
Like those were 3 huge years, but then you 100%. Come to find out it's like he's not quirky. Just not super likable.
He's just not. Yeah, he doesn't get along with his teammates.
Yes.
And the media.
Or
is
really
not a fan.
Anybody.
Right. Yeah. I think that's why there's 2 reasons I'm not sad he's retiring. 1, because of every reason you just mentioned. And 2, because all of those reasons he brought to New York. And I'm still not happy about all that. I'm still upset.
I'm sure.
And if I never have to see him do this again, I'll be really excited.
You know, that's a thing, though. I will defend anybody to the end of the earth
who does
that with their sleeve. Because
you can Ichiro did it. You can pull your sleeve up. I don't have a problem with pulling your sleeve up. I have a problem with pulling the lower hem of your jersey from outside your back pocket and your pants all the way up to your ear the way Josh Donaldson does.
Because I remember
the dude sits there and goes like this, Brad. He pulls it as far as he can and he like pinches it. No, it's so
specifically about that. When I played summer ball when I was 16, we had like 3 different jerseys that we wore, and one of them was supposed to be like a really stretchy pinstripe, but it wasn't super stretchy. It was really tight through my shoulders and like my arms. So every time I got up to bat, it was like that thing came all the way up, dude, because I needed the mobility. And so anytime I see anybody do that, like, I get it.
Yeah,
although
but not
anymore, you don't need to because the jerseys are stretchy.
Exactly.
All the way around. But
and on top of that, dude, like, I just, I've already said what I need to say. It's just, if you get up to the plate and you're that quirky and picky about your uniform fitting just right and feeling just right, you better produce.
Nomar Garcia Parra has entered the chat.
I was just going to make that joke. I was literally just going to say the same thing. Nomar. And his weird.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. We got to get a video of that and put it on the show, or maybe put it on the show for. You know what? We'll get a video and we'll overlay it with this audio. And we'll put it on social media. You can follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube is where we have our shorts. So don't forget to follow us everywhere. And if you can like and subscribe, go ahead and do that, especially on YouTube. That's the best way. But follow us, like our stuff, share it with the rest of your baseball family, because it's all, that's what we're doing here. So anyway, we'll find some clips of Nomar Garciaparra and Josh Donaldson fiddling before they get up to the plate. Oh, man. Okay, we got to dive into this Fanatics Nike MLB jersey fiasco.
More of it. The saga continues.
It's playing out like a J.K. Rowling novel, man. Like somebody, there's drama, there's finger pointing.
So much.
Somebody's waving their wand and trying to speak gibberish. You know?
We talked about the finger pointing last week, but it's like, it's bananas that it continues. And, you know, go ahead and talk about the Fanatic CEO, because I had a little bit of hope there at first, right?
Yeah, I did too. So Michael Rubin, CEO of Fanatics, young guy, seems like a really...
I was shocked. I would say shocked, but I was surprised that he was that young. I assumed he would be kind of a younger guy because of how long they've been around.
But yeah, I was surprised young.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought too. Which is good for him. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Fanatics, just so you know, they began just like doing t-shirts and stuff, like in posters. Yeah. It was nothing big and special. It was literally a fan-centric merch shop.
Well, I remember when it started, it was like, you get like a basic t-shirt.
Yeah.
Right. Then it was like, and it was like somehow they were paying the bills with like licensing, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, now they're doing MLB shop. They're doing the NBA shop. They're doing the NFL shop. Oh, now they've got everybody. Now it's massive, and it's Amazon for sports.
Right.
Right.
So, but it didn't start that way. And here we are now. They're making on the field jerseys for Major League Baseball. And I think, would they say the NHL is coming as well? I think they're going to start doing
next
that
year.
As well.
Next year, I think, yeah.
Well, they better get their ducks in a row before this happens, because if baseball's any indication. Okay, but see, here we are already coming after Fanatics, okay? And this is part of the problem. So Michael Rubin, CEO of Fanatics, he makes his statement. And I'm going to summarize. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you.
Do you have the first one, the first part of this?
No, I don't. Go ahead.
I'm just going to paraphrase roughly. Basically, he said we're getting the crap kicked out of us because of this whole thing. And I was kind of like, when I heard that, I was like, oh, there's some self-awareness here, maybe. And maybe he seemed like, and we're going to do better. But Brig, what did he say instead?
Do the Tylenol thing. Remember Tylenol? You remember when they accidentally, something happened, they were poisoning people on accident because somebody got in and messed with Tylenol.
Yeah, because I was in the industry and had to pull it all off the shelf.
And they pulled everything. They went 100% retro active or whatever. Well, what's the thing? That's a recall. They did
that's called a recall. So they had
Bro. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and it was the right thing, and they thought it would just drive their stock into the ground and that nobody would, but it ended up being this big trust thing, and now everybody loves Tylenol, right? Maybe more than they did before. So I'm agreeing with you, Brad, because what I thought would happen was an ownership move, like a big fat, okay, we made a mistake, whatever, right? No. What ends up happening, he says, we've purely been doing exactly as we're told. So now the Fanatics guy is going, don't point at me. All I'm doing is what I'm told. Now here's how it works, because more details have come out. Part of it to alibi out this guy. He's like, listen, Nike comes up with the design. Then Major League Baseball kind of sanctions it. They're like, yep, they sign off on it. They give it their blessing. Then it all goes to Fanatics, who says, okay, we're going to manufacture these things for you. We've got our facilities. We're going to manufacture it. And that's how the final product comes to be. So they're all wrong.
Yes. Yes. So this is the way that I see this, Brig. Have you ever taught somebody to do something, and then they do it the way that you show them, but there's like something about it that's wrong?
For sure.
And you say, did you think to ask?
Right.
That's Fanatics right there. They were shown how to do this. They were given all the schematics, everything from Nike, and they're doing it exactly as they're told. But they didn't think to ask about, like, well, now hold on, wait a minute.
Now, wait a minute.
What about this weird thing here?
Yeah, like the names being the size of ants.
The names look weird. You can see through these pants.
Yeah. There are three different colors of gray.
These gray tops don't match these gray bottoms. Yeah. Something's not right here. Let's revisit this.
Yeah.
They didn't do that.
No.
They should have had some quality control going on somewhere along the line and revisited this whole thing with Nike and Major League Baseball. And Major League Baseball doesn't get off scot-free because they signed off on it to begin with. Was it one of those things that just came across the desk? Yeah, whatever. Okay. Right? I doubt it. Somebody looked at this and said, yeah, this is great. This is going to look amazing on the field, on TV. It's going to look fantastic. Can you see the player's name? No, but that's fine.
Yeah, who cares? Right? Let's move our logo down. See how we put ourselves front and center? That's the most important thing. We're the brand.
Exactly. And then Nike, and then who at Nike ran through and tested all this stuff and was like, yeah, that's what we want to put our name on.
Yep.
Or was it, we're Nike, we can't fail?
Well, hey now, there may be some of that going on. Here's what I'm saying, though. So we've talked about it. Nike designs it. Major League Baseball says okay. And then we get to Fanatics, who does it, right?
Who
builds it. And here we have the final product. Now, we've talked about the failings of the quality control and the common sense going on at Fanatics.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me in that chain of authority, in that design triangular sort of collaboration they got going on, the Fanatics didn't then send a proof copy to Major League Baseball and to Nike. Hey, is this what you wanted? Right? This is what you said, right?
Is this what this is supposed to look like?
Of course they did. Of course they did. You're not going to run thousands of these without a proof.
Yeah.
You're going to have a print proof. You're going to see one for each club. You're going to see it in home and away. If you're doing City Connect, you're going to see a proof of that. I guarantee you that the colors are all being proofed, the stitching, all of it. Everything's getting approved. And probably by the owners or some delegation of owners within Major League Baseball who says, my franchise not wearing that or whatever.
Kansas City.
Exactly.
We need our names bigger.
That's the proof positive that this conversation is happening. So where in the chain did it break? And I'm saying all three places.
I think you're right. I think there was a level of arrogance with Nike where they refused to believe that something they had developed was faulty.
Yeah.
Or wasn't ready to go. Because I wonder if they had been like, if like 3 years ago, they're like, we're going to have a sweet new jersey material for you guys in 3 years. And is like coming up against a deadline. It's like, well, this is what we've got. This is what we got to go with. Ask for an extension.
Yeah.
Next time, ask for an extension. People are more likely to give them to you than not.
That's right. And put that in your back nobody pocket. Cares. Right? Like the product we've been using is fine. It's just fine. Could it be better? Sure.
Absolutely.
But it's fine. Yeah. It works.
And it looks good. So here's
and it looks good.
So the NBA every year at the All-Star Game showcases like new tech. A couple years ago, they had this like fluid LED jersey that was pretty cool. You could like mess with the name and the number and the color, everything. Like it was really, really cool.
Huh.
Now, the NBA didn't say, we're rolling this out next year. These are going to be our jerseys next year. They said, this is something we're working on. TBD.
What do you think? Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty cool, huh? Well, we don't have all the kinks ironed out on it, but we're working on it. We think it's pretty neat. We thought we'd show you. That should have been the approach last year during the All-Star Game with these new Vapor jerseys was, hey, we have this idea for this new material. We're almost there. Maybe not quite because you can see through the pants, but like we're getting there. We're really close with it.
Here, so let's just break from this for a minute to talk about the NBA's approach. Why is Major League Baseball not doing something very similar? Because think of the level of trust, niche audience, what do you call that? Like I don't know, scooping is not the right word, but like intrigue for your very, very niche group of people that are going to just salivate over new tech, right? You know, here's our new partners for baseball bats. This is why birch bats are starting to emerge. Here's what's going on in the ash forests with the Japanese beetles or whatever. There's all this stuff going on all the time where you think, and it sounds like in the NBA they're doing this, they're being transparent and they're inviting their fan base into the behind the scenes stuff.
I think there's a reason for this, and it goes back to actually a conversation you and I were having over Marco Polo last week.
Mm-hmm.
So the NBA, I feel like, is a very progressive fan base. Their three-point shot, right?
Yep.
The transition from playing inside out to outside in now with the weaponization of the three-point shot. There are people who are like, basketball is better than the 80s. I want to see guys get beat up. It's like, no, it wasn't better. This is way more skilled basketball than it was. And that was brute ball. This is actual basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem that baseball has, Brig, is that it lives so much in its past that people don't want to see that stuff. Because everybody's just go back to majestic, stupid Nike swoosh. That's not the answer. That is not the answer. I promise you that is not the answer. To go back to majestic. There's a reason they went to Nike. And I'm sure there's actually several of them. They should be swinging logs, not these newfangled technology bats. No, you'll get way better offensive output. These guys have technologically advanced bats that they have now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was one of the things that you mentioned, that Aaron Judge is swinging the most technologically advanced bat in the history of baseball right now. And that's not the end of it.
No, it's going
to continue. And I think if they were to present this stuff, people would be like, Babe Ruth didn't need that kind of bat. But I'm sure
he was swinging a tree trunk. So
he was swinging a log. I'm sure he would have if he had the option, though, because he had more dingers.
Yep.
You tell me this bat will hit me 35. This one will hit me 33. I'm swinging bat A.
For sure. And it's a matter of two. Like, probably. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If the distribution is more than one, they're going to take the new one.
Yeah, exactly. But I think reason they don't do that is because baseball's fan base, generally speaking, not everybody, there's a large portion of baseball's fan base that is so stuck in the days of yore with baseball that they don't want to hear about it. They don't care. They'd rather have a heavy cotton majestic jersey than a new wave Nike Vapor jersey.
And listen, baseball family, before you start getting upset, I am with you, okay? Between the two of us, I'm the least progressive.
Backdrop.
You got the wrong. You need to hoist the black flag, Brad. This is why we call him Blackjack Brad, because he does not mind being the villain. There's a certain segment of you listening and watching right now who are totally on Brad's side. And you're like, yep, move forward. Let's be progressive. If it's new, it's best. And that's fine. That's totally fine.
Barney Stinson said it, Brig.
What?
Barney Stinson said it. New is always better.
Yeah, he did say it. Then there's the group like me, who's like, no, how do we mesh the old, the pure, the sort of like nostalgic and the reminiscent, right? How do we honor what has come before and fold in some really good ideas for the future? I don't want to move so far into progressive that we lose the past and we lose its resonance. I can't have that. That would just ruin it for me, honestly. So I feel like baseball is inherently inclusive, and this is something we talked about the other day. Baseball is inherently inclusive. When we talk about who's the greatest of all time, it's not a matter of who's the greatest now, it's who's also the greatest, right? Who's the greatest? We have to go all the way back.
It's a one of the greatest situation.
It is a one of
the greatest, right?
That's right. Thank you. Because that's what I said. Yeah. You got me. Thanks for getting my back. So I think for me, when I go to the Louisville Slugger Bat Factory and I go back into the batting cages, you can swing the same turning model as some of these great players from 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And you can feel what Ty Cobb's bat felt like. And it's truly incredible. Like, it really is super, super cool. And to try and swing that thing around feels like you're doing the hammer throw in the Olympics with a car on the end of it. Right? It's, like, it's crazy. And that pitch is not moving very fast. But it's just enough to make you feel like a dumb kid, right? But I love that. I love to be able to hold it in my hands or, you know, wrap my arms around it in some cases and try really hard to hit a baseball with something that Ty Cobb swung. That kind of thing. Carrying that forward into the conversation and into the context of where we are now and where we're going to be in the future, that's where I'm at. That's so for me, it's both. We just have to find elegant ways for it to be both.
Yeah. No, I understand that.
And it's hard.
But I think that's why they don't do that presentation at the All-Star break, where it's like, oh, hey, they showed this to the players. We're not going to ask what you think about it, but the players seem to like it.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. And I think there is a large disparity between what the players want and value and think is
big time
for the
big
game
time.
And the fan
base. Because the players are like, I want to be comfortable on the field.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I don't want to be wearing a heavy jersey because that's not uncomfortable. Then I have to pull the back seam from my belt.
Yeah.
All the way up.
Yeah. Nailed it. Way to go, callback. That was awesome.
It's called comedy break.
Okay, let's move on. A couple of things before we take a break. Ronald Acuña Jr. is dealing with knee problems. And that's a big fat rut-row, okay? That's what that is. That's a uh-oh situation. They're saying he's going to be ready for opening day, but an MRI revealed meniscus irritation.
That was Brian Snicker being optimistic, I think, that he's going to be ready to go.
I think so, too. For those of you that don't know what the meniscus is, think of it as a jelly pad between the two bones where your knee comes together, basically. Yes. That's an easy way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So he seemed fine last year coming off a knee injury that he did sustain in 2021. So this is not necessarily a new thing.
And so go ahead. Well, I was going to say that I was like, oh man, is this lingering from the ACL tear? Because a lot of times a meniscus and an ACL will happen at the same time. It's not uncommon.
Right. Yeah.
But the fact that he's able to play the way he did after he came back, and then especially last year, getting 70 bags, like, it doesn't seem like it was bugging him last year. This seems like a new thing.
Yeah, I think it's a new thing. Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say, that's exactly what I was going to say. And a meniscus is finicky. There's a lot going on. It's really deep inside. So depending on how it may be strained or torn or whatever.
So this is the thing that's scary about it to me, is that Kyle Lewis in 2022, right? Yeah. He tweaked his knee going back for a routine fly ball in center field in Seattle.
Yeah.
He was like the future of the franchise before Julio, by the way. Maybe it's 2021. But anyway, he has not been the same. He's basically out of baseball now. He didn't come back that year. We kept being like, oh man, Kyle Lewis is coming back. He's running the bases. Oh, he's a little bit ginger. Oh, but they say he's all right. He's coming back. And then it ended up being a concussion. He got hit in the head. But then he came back from the concussion, and the knee was still bothering him. Yeah. Right? And then those who are familiar with Brandon Roy and the Portland Trailblazers, granted, he had knee problems in college before he came into the league, but the beginning of the end of his career was he knocked knees with Ron Artest in L.A., tore his meniscus, and that was the beginning of the end for him. He was never the same after that. And so, to me, a meniscus is a really, really scary thing because it is so finicky. Guys can come back from them and be just fine. But it could also be the beginning of the end for some guys because it just is never fine.
Well, I'll tell you.
It's a lingering pain that you're fine one day and then you're not the next.
True. Anything in the orthopedic realm, shoulders, knees, that kind of the ball joints and stuff, it's rough, man. They're so odd. And the fact that a body is capable of producing and functioning with something so strange and with such dynamic range of movement and then what we ask of it, truly incredible. So what I will say, though, is even if this is the beginning of the end for Ronald Acuña Jr., it's not going to be the beginning of the end. Thank you. It's not going to be the beginning of the end of his career. It might be the beginning of the end of him in the outfield, but we very well are could be, and I argue are, seeing a tremendous shift in mindset because of what Bryce Harper did.
Could
I
be.
I think that in the event that it needs to be that way, that he needs to come in from the outfield, there will be a place for him.
There will be. Dude, he would have the strongest arm of any first baseman if that's what he played.
Are you kidding me? Yes.
What a waste of an absolute cannon.
I agree. But you keep his presence, you keep his bat, you keep his speed, right. You keep all that. If you, you know,
he would be you could make him the fastest DH in the league.
For sure. Oh, yeah. And then his whole job is to hit dingers and steal bases. That's all he's supposed to do.
What DH has the job to steal bases?
Right.
Just the new ones. But no, I truly hope though that it is nothing. That he comes back too. And he's ready opening day and he's fine. I'm pulling for him again.
Yeah, it needs to be nothing. Like, honestly. Yeah.
Yep. All right, Briggs, okay. Tell us about Rick Woodfield.
Yeah, the last thing we got to talk about is Rick Woodfield. So on June 20th, 2024, Major League Baseball is moving to Birmingham, Alabama for the afternoon to do a baseball game that is a tribute to the Negro Leagues. Rick Woodfield is the oldest professional baseball field in the United States. It was built in 1910, and Brad provided us some context, which is really important. Fenway opened in 1912, and Wrigley opened in 1914. This puts Rickwood as the official oldest major league facility in the country. It's currently being renovated, which is good because it has been in
I'd say professional, not major league, professional field.
Okay, right. That's fair. Professional field. Okay. That's a sticky subject, actually. This is really interesting. Well,
I mean, we could get into that one day, but
by name, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, so it's being renovated. They're trying to remain as true to the original as they possibly can. Here's a picture for you. That is what... So cool. It's so cool. It's so retro. I love everything about it. They are updating the padding in the outfield. They're putting in all new grass, all new dirt and clay. They're upgrading some of the seating, and all while keeping it the original as pristine and as original as possible. Some of the players, though, it was really fun to look at back at the players who played at Rick Woodfield. Obviously, in the Negro Leagues, we have Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, Satchel Paige, Jackie Robinson. But then, in addition to that, we've got Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, Roberto Clemente, Lou Gehrig, and notably, Willie Mays. And the reason it's cool that Willie Mays played there is because Willie Mays remains alive. He's 92 right now, and he is going to be honored at this game on June 20th. So, very exciting.
This is very exciting. I love it so much. It's super cool. And I think that this field is in MLB The Show this year as well.
It is.
They have it featured there. So that's super duper cool. I love this stuff. I love these old stadiums. Like, I'm not a huge, like we talked about before, like I'm more progressive than you are when it comes to baseball, but I love retro stadiums. Like, I'm going out to Surprise Stadium to watch a game later this week. And I love that stadium because it has a lot of the same feel of I want to pull that picture up again.
Yeah, do it.
So how they have that overhang
over the
bleachers there. Surprise Stadium has that same kind of feel to it where it overhangs the stands like that. I love it. It's really cool. I wish they could get away with making retro style stadiums like that still so that everybody was like that, right? Yeah. But you just can't. You just can't. So
you can't.
It's amazing, though.
Fact that they're putting so much into it, it's like what they did in Savannah, right? They just upgraded what needed to be upgraded.
Yeah.
And most of it's not. Most of it's not. That field is as historic as it gets, and it is old.
It is old.
They're still using it. And it looks so old, much fun. It is old. You sit on those plank boards. You know, the bleachers are wood, and it's just painted green.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yep. But anyway, ticket prices for the Rickwood Field game. Well, first of all, St. Louis Cardinals and San Francisco Giants are the two teams playing. Again, that's cool. The 20th of June. They're both going to be wearing their Negro League throwback jerseys, which is also very cool as a tribute. Ticket prices are still not available, nor is any ticket availability. Like, we don't know anything about when you can buy tickets. We don't know how much they're going to cost. We know nothing. I did a deep dive the other day.
I bet you what's going to happen is people who are on, like, the Cardinals and the Giants mailing list, they're going to be notified first.
For sure. Well, and all the bigwigs in MLB's circle.
Right.
It's going to be the same as the Field of Dreams game, where getting in for the average Joe was pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
The average ticket of the Field of Dreams game was around $900, give or take. I saw some as low as like $442, and then it just went up from there, like, honestly. Yeah. I saw stuff. One average estimate was in the $1,060 range, I think. But so I just rounded it to 900 because I couldn't find a significant or consistent answer. Yeah. So it's going to be something like that. But this field is bigger. It seats more. It has a larger capacity. So there is a chance that some of the
it just means more tickets they could sell for $900.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's what it's going
to
be.
So the question is, Brad, the question is, would you pay $900 to go see the Cardinals and the Giants at Rickwood Field?
Money's not an issue. I don't know. Honestly, it's hard to say. It's hard to say if I would or not. I would love to. That would be so fun. I would love to go to the Field of Dreams game. That would be a blast. And this might be a little controversial, but the thing that I have an issue with is the crowd. I don't know if that's a crowd I want to be mixing and mingling with, because I don't know how because they say the real fans sit in the cheap seats.
That's what they say.
You know? And that those are not the cheap seats. Oh, I don't know if that would be a fun crowd to sit with.
That's an interesting take.
Because you watch the Field of Dreams game the last couple of years, and you can tell, Brig, the people especially sitting behind the plate are there to be seen.
Yeah.
Very much so.
It's and networking.
That's not my crowd. So it's I don't know if I would want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to be involved in that. But, like, if they were just like, you got to pass a baseball quiz to get into this game, or we're not selling you a ticket, I'm there. Those are my,
Oh, yeah.
Baseball dorks, I'm there. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. We should design a quiz that you have to pass to get into retro cool games, like the novelty we games should. Like this. That would be awesome. Baseball family, stay tuned. We're going to hit you with some questions.
Put it on the email list.
I know you didn't ask me. Yeah, I know you didn't ask me, but I'm going to answer it anyway.
Well, I figured it was going to go back your way anyway.
Well, 100% I would go. I don't care who's there. I don't care how much it costs. If money's no object, I'm there. 100%. Yeah. You kidding me? You're going to take my favorite thing in the whole world, and you're going to put a retro spin on it? I'm going to be there. I'm going to be wearing brown leather. Okay.
You would be there carrying a typewriter under your arm.
Yeah, a typewriter.
I'm playing the role as a sports writer today.
Exactly right. I have a card in my fedora, and I will be wearing scratchy wool. You know I will. It'll be 120 million degrees outside with 1,000% humidity, and I'll be in a three-piece tweed. You got it. You know it.
And see, because I would want to show up in shorts and a tank top, because that's just too dang hot. And those are not the people who are going to be there, Brig. Yeah, I would look like the redneck on the golf course. That's the role I would be playing that day. You'd be playing old-timey sports writer, see, and I'm redneck on the golf course.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing we go together. It is.
One of us,
because one or the other of us will vouch for each other when we're in there. Right. All right, baseball family, we want to know, if money was no object, would you go to a $900 a seat game at Rickwood Field on June 20th? We want to know. Okay, when we get back, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we are going to get into our conversation with Patrick Montgomery. He is author of Baseball's Great Expectations, Candid Stories of Ball Players Who Didn't Live Up to the Hype. And we're going to get into that right now. Thank you. Welcome back, baseball family. We are excited to do another one of our interviews. We have Patrick Montgomery here with us today. We're going to get you his bio here in just a moment. But first things first, he's going to get caught in a rundown just like everybody else.
Let's go.
Welcome to the show, Patrick. What is your quest?
My quest is to enjoy baseball, tell it, and shoot below a 90 every round of golf.
Fabulous.
That's a solid quest there at the end. I would never be able to do that.
No.
Okay, next question. What is your favorite color?
Blue. As you can tell behind me, I love any shade of blue. Coast Guard blue, Savannah blue, whatever it is.
That's awesome. Now, we talked about this earlier, but you, sir, have excellent taste in baseball. And
you as well, sir.
Thank you. If the Yankees were a beverage, in your opinion, what would they be?
Well, I would normally say coffee, because coffee is an everyday quality luxury item. So actually, upon further thought, yes, I'll say coffee. It's always there. Nice. It's there first thing in the morning. You can have it with lunch. Heck, even for dinner after dessert. It's there all the time, and it's always excellent.
I love that.
Okay, I have a controversial take on this, but I want to know what you think about this. Is Babe Ruth overly romanticized?
No.
Oh, here we go.
I think he's underrated still.
Yes.
100 years later, underrated?
Take that, Brad.
Well, you have to realize Babe Ruth the person. Like, you have the player stuff, right, which is amazing. I mean, people go, oh, you didn't face the all-around best with the African-Americans and the Latins and everything else. Absolutely, that is true. But you also didn't have the nutrition, the weightlifting, the coaching, the travel. I mean, they have travel by train and car, bus, whatever. Nowadays, they're luxury airliners and everything's done for them. So I think it's a wash. I think the great players yesterday are great today. And I mean, imagine Babe Ruth with the weightlifting and nutrition and the good coaching. I think he would be just as good.
I think it's tough because it's like that. I've heard that argument a ton. Like, imagine if he had a weight trainer and everything in the nutrition. Like, but would he have though? Did he have the personality to go and hit the weight room and lay off the hot dogs for 6 months? You know,
who's to say that is the way to go? I mean, Jose Canseco, great body, worked out all the time. The body breaks down. Mike Piazza, the body breaks down. Is being in that great shape necessarily good for baseball?
I think there's a balance that, you know, a lot of times, like a lot of guys talked about, like, pitchers don't lift heavy because you're going to decrease your range of motion. Well, not if you stretch, you know. I think the key is stretching.
Mickey Mantle never lifted weights, right? And he was
Griffey never lifted weights.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lawrence Taylor. I mean, I know we're switching to football, but
right.
One of the strongest, fastest players ever never lifted weight. So. But you're right. Like Otani does and Suzuki, they are big into stretching. They'll stretch for an hour or two at a time. So that is really the key. And I can't imagine Babe Ruth really being that flexible.
Put a hot dog. Reach.
Well, we can continue this argument for an hour. And I just love this conversation.
Absolutely. All right, Brad.
Okay, so the last question is, if you could change anything about baseball right now, what would you change?
I would enforce a 10-man pitching staff. I hate the revolving door of relievers. It slows the game down, and it just doesn't allow pitchers to pitch. It just teaches them to throw as hard as you can for an inning and get out. I think the premium should be at a starting pitcher that can go 7 innings, 8 innings, and I'd love to see baseball go back to that.
I
hadn't thought about that. I think it would help the strategy of the game a ton too, especially like you talk about pitchers just go in there and throw 9-10 pitches as hard as you can, and then we'll pull you out. Like, no, like pace yourself a little bit. Yeah. I think that I hadn't thought about that, but that's a great way to go. I like that.
Well, and strategize too. Have you read David Cohn's book, Full Count?
I have not, no.
Oh, it's magnificent. It's part really treatise on pitching. It's part biography, autobiography. It's wonderful.
Well, toward the end there, he wasn't throwing more than 92 usually. So, I mean, he knew how to meter himself out, and that's a part of pitching.
That's right.
Yep.
All right, baseball family, when we come back, we're going to get into the rest of the main conversation with Patrick.
Welcome back, baseball family. Thank you for continuing to join us on this fantastic journey with Patrick Montgomery. We're going to get into his book, but first, let me tell you a little bit about him. He is an award-winning author of Baseball's Great Expectations, a veteran with 25 years of federal service, a member of both the Society of American Baseball Research, or SABRE, and the Major League Baseball Players Alumni Association. He is a fellow member with us of the Internet Baseball Writers Association of America, or the IBWAA. That's a lot. That's a mouthful. Got a lot going on for you.
He's easy to deal with, and it's fun.
That's right. So,
well, and that wasn't even all. There's more, but
there's plenty more.
I was like, let's do. Your bio is incredible. It really is incredible. Yeah.
So, my first question for you is, what inspired the idea for this book?
It really goes back for me. Childhood. It was a staple. Baseball was a staple in my childhood. And it goes back to listening to the radio underneath the pillow because you don't want to get in trouble. And those players that I collected the cards for and I'd hear about, like so much, like from Phil Rizzuto, the Scooter, talking about them, and all of a sudden you stopped hearing about them. And what happened to them? What about these great players that should have been great that just it didn't happen? What happened to them? So I've always wondered, I've always loved the stories of like the other side of the story. Because we all know what we're told, but there's so much more in there's so much more of things. So like David Clyde, the pitcher, like everyone compared him to Sandy Koufax and the great left-hander, the big hook, the fastball, and he literally graduated high school, and two or three weeks later, he's starting in the major leagues as a pitcher, and getting a telegram from Sandy Koufax pushing him a glove before his game. I mean, imagine being in high school, graduating, and then doing that. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think I would break. And this person didn't. He went out there and pitched a very good game, facing a lineup from the Twins of Ogilvy and Olivia and also Rod Carew and Larry Hissel. And he didn't fold. He pitched a great game. So it's those players I've always wondered about, like what happened to him. And players like Brian Milner. If you're a Blue Jays fan, you might know him, but this is a kid that graduated high school, and then the last game of the year was a all-star game for high school, and he wouldn't sign a contract because he wanted to get the all-star game in. So he plays the all-star game, walks off the field, goes in the clubhouse, and signs a major league contract, and literally the next day, he's in a major league ballpark and warming up to play in the major leagues. So less than 24 hours removed from his last high school game, he's in the major leagues on a major league roster. I mean, those stories like that I didn't hear about, and I wanted to know more about. And Brian Milner is one of those stories.
It's crazy. Like, I think about guys. Like, I think about a couple guys I played with in high school who got drafted out of high school, and you know, they both elected to go to college. But I've thought about it a lot. Like, what if they had gone to gone straight to the minor leagues. Like, what if I had gotten drafted and chosen to go straight to the minor leagues as an 18-year-old kid who knows literally nothing about anything? Like, the minor leagues is one thing, but to go to the big leagues like that, that's crazy to me. That's
absolutely
bananas.
And he's the only player ever, only non-positional player to get drafted out of high school to go right to the major leagues ever.
Yeah.
And then there have been catchers from college that have gone right to the major leagues, but no catcher even has done that from high school. So
yeah,
a player like Brian Milner is amazing.
Yeah, that's the story. That's one of the stories that resonated most with me, because not only are you thrust from an 18-year-old who is just dreaming about playing in the Astrodome and doesn't want to sign anything because that's his opportunity. He grew up in the shadows of it, I think, is the words that you
absolutely
used. Which is terrific writing, but then to be dropped not just into your major league lineup the next couple of days, not just in the nine hole, which is where he ended up, but that he was behind the dish taking heat that he'd never seen before. It's crazy.
That's like learning to drive a go-kart thing being in the Indy 500 the next day.
It really is. I went from, I can kind of relate to that because, like, as a high schooler, I only made it to JV, but one time in a scrimmage against the varsity, they had the varsity pitchers pitch against the varsity hitter, so they're pitching with the JV squad, and we had a shortstop who he got drafted. This is one of the guys who got drafted. He threw like 95. And the coach like pointed at me. He's like, get your gear on, you're catching. And everybody, like all the catchers came around. Like, as I'm getting my gear on, hey, it's nice knowing you, man. You've been a great part of this team. And we love having you around. But we'll bury you behind home plate after you die. Because none of us have ever seen this.
And what happened? Crazy. Did you handle it well?
I handled it well. I caught him. I did bruise my hand because I palmed one. But other than that, I caught everything in the pocket and did a surprising good job framing. I was impressed with myself. I'll tell you that. So
isn't that a great feeling?
It was a great feeling.
Well, the great thing about Brian Milner was when he got this a triple in his last game in the major leagues. I think it was actually the second to last bat that he had. And he huffs around first, second, and gets a third, slides in, gets up, and the third base coach is like, hey, you know, look up. And everyone's giving him a standing ovation. Now, visiting crowd, this was, you know, for like an away game. And they're giving the catcher, a rookie, a standing ovation for his triple base hit. So, I don't know, being a rookie a couple days later out of high school, getting a standing ovation in a major league stadium, doesn't get any better than that at all.
You could hang it up right there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of how the story progresses. And it's a little bit, you know, sobering. I mean, it's a lot sobering. And my question is, how were these conversations during the book's preparatory stages and in the research of it? It sounds like you had some pretty difficult conversations with these guys.
It wasn't as difficult as you would think, because in time people soften up a little bit. We always want to remember the good stuff, like you and catching the kid that threw 95. I mean, you didn't get best JV, but you remember that time that you did that. And it's much like that with these players. Instead of focusing on the injuries and the bad stuff that happened to Brian Milner to keep him from major leagues down the line in the future, he remembers the triple and the standing ovation and the feeling that he had having a beer in the clubhouse afterward with the guys. Those are the things he talks about. And many of the players, I mean, I don't think I really had a bitter interview with anybody, because they were just excited to even have the opportunity to play Major League Baseball. And you see these players, the chance of making a Major League roster for even a day is well under 1%. It's like my daughter and I, she's a Saber person and took the analytics stuff, and she broke it down to be in the Major Leagues for 10 years and get the full 10 years in the Major Leagues to be vested. It's like 0.23024. So 0.23024 of 1%. So
whoa,
that's of 1%.
Sniff of that.
That's of 1%.
Yeah, 1%. So if you can get a sniff of the major leagues, God bless them. I mean, it's an amazing opportunity, and I think they all realize that.
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
That makes a whole lot more sense too. With like. Was the Brewers a couple of years ago did Lorenzo Cain a solid? Mm-hmm. He got like his 10 years, and then they released him. Like, that makes that so much more significant. I knew it was a big deal, but man.
Yeah. But to get to the point, and that's like in my first book, The Splendid Six, players like David Wright, Ryan Zimmerman, Mark Reynolds, all those guys got to that point. So to have those six players from the same little hometown area get to that number is amazing. So that's the baseball miracle of The Splendid Six. I mean, to retro that, but that's kind of why these players are not bitter, because how can you get bitter when you're so graced?
So. Wow. That's great that you were able to have such humble conversations. I mean, it comes through in many of the pieces, these little vignettes you've written, that they're so humble. And Brian Milner was the one. I mean, the guy went on to teach Jorge Posada how to move from a position player to being a catcher.
Yes.
And to hear just how humble he is to take a guy like that. And I think you wrote in the book that he says like, no, I just kind of helped. And there was a lot of other, you know, players and coaches. And it's like, shut up. Hello. You were the first guy to take him from where he was not a good fit and put him where he has now had this incredible career. Like, come on, Brian.
Well, he is extremely humble, but he made sure to let me know that during practice they would do the pop-up time drill.
Yeah.
And his times were better than his for the longest time. Then in time, Posada got as good or better. But he was proud to mention that his pop-up time was still there.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I keep that in my back pocket.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Was there a specific story through this whole thing that resonated with you the most, that it was like, man, that one, it like really stuck with you?
The one that sticks to me the most is the first chapter that I wrote. It was the story of Brian Cole. This poor kid was compared to any Hall of Famer out there. Al Pujols said that this kid was the best ball player that he ever saw. CC Sabathia said that he was among the toughest hitters he ever faced. And he died tragically driving to his minor league team right after spring training. And by all accounts, he was a player that was to come up that year and make a huge noise in baseball in New York City. And maybe could have, you know, challenged, you know, the Derek Jeter players and players like that, and brought more attention to the Mets and helped them even have their own dynasty.
Wow. Yeah, that was a terribly sad. Again, many of these stories have a sober tone, but I think you've done a great job of I don't want to say resurrecting, but I don't have a better word, sort of the triumph underneath all of it. And how do you do that? Like, we're all writers here. Like, what?
It's kind of like what here? Like what I said, like, we all have what we're told, and then there's always more on the margin that you have to nibble at, and you keep nibbling at it, and you find more and more. With the Brian Cole story, there's a lot of things that I unearthed just by talking to family and friends of Brian Cole that was never published, never told. And sometimes, like, we see the shiny object and then we forget about it, and you have to go back to it. And it's been close to 20 years since Brian Cole died, and a lot of things happened and a lot of things developed, and a lot of memories are kind of let go in time. And that's happened with the Brian Cole story. Even with the lawsuit with Ford, where they sued Ford over many, many years in a settlement, and they got a huge settlement. There was a lot of back and forth with the judge and a lot of crazy accusations from all parties, and that's in the book. And it kind of shows how big corporation can kind of go after the little man, and all sorts of even social stratification issues that were all part of it. So that chapter was the most enjoyable, and the one I had to edit the most because it was like 100 pages when I was done. So I had to get it down to a concise 45 pages.
No big deal.
It hurt because it was so, it was so, so heart wrenching.
Yeah, that's tough. Well, and you want to do a service to the family and to his memory and to the story itself, right? We're all beholden to the story we're telling as storytellers. That's our job, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah, that I can't imagine the difficulty of that. Wow.
Go ahead, Brad.
Babe.
I think you're going to ask the same question. What was your process for picking players to highlight in this book?
It's kind of funny. As I'm talking to you, I have my notebook. You know, like when you start thinking about ideas for books, you take out your little notebook and you start doodling. And originally what I kind of wanted to do was make a lineup of all the best non-players that we never heard of, like the players that just, boom, disappeared, or what happened to them. So I came up with the lineup, like, 20, like a 27 man roster, kind of like the bench, the starting rotation. And I went through them, and the ones that I didn't want to have a negative, sad, bitter story. So I kind of went through the stories and I found ones that had silver linings and good stories. And then I kind of whittled it down. And if unfortunately they're passed away, it was more difficult to find good information to use. But then sometimes it just goes to which ball players are actually wanting to talk to you, and which family and friends and general managers you can get a hold of, because I didn't want to just get the story from the player. I also wanted to get a kind of a calibration from the general managers that drafted them, or the front offices and the scouts, the family, the players that played with them, because otherwise it's just a one-sided story and you have to get the full composite. So if I could get a rich tapestry, then I did write about them.
Yeah, I mean, that's journalism 101, right?
Yeah.
Go talk to people around them. Yeah, I remember doing that assignment in college.
So, but that's the long answer. Like there was a player, Danny Goodwin, that was a catcher, and he was drafted back to back years number one. I mean, how's that happen?
Wow.
I mean, you never heard of the guy. I mean, I never heard of him. And then I did research on him, and he's very happy today. I mean, he's perfectly happy. He has his own business and doesn't really want to talk about it. I mean, he's not somebody that wants to revisit it, which is fine, absolutely. But yeah. I mean, the idea that number one overall in the country back to back years, it's mind boggling.
That is crazy. Mind-boggling.
Yeah. I wanted to move on really quick and talk about Ron Nietzsche. Nietzsche? Yeah. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Nietzsche.
Okay. Yeah. Ron Nietzsche. Yep. So check this out, baseball family. Ron played one season in 1952 with Pittsburgh. He threw 54 and two-thirds innings in nine starts across 12 games, 12 appearances. He recorded 31 strikeouts from the mound, and 27 of them came in one game.
Well, that was in the minor leagues that he had 27 strikeouts.
Oh, okay. But I mean, I was like, wait a minute.
But he threw a perfect game. Not only was it perfect, but 27 batters struck out. 27 up, 27 down, 27 strikeouts.
I mean, oh, my word.
That will never happen ever again. I mean, I don't care if you're playing a high school team and you're Nolan Ryan. It's not going to happen.
Somebody's going to get a piece of it. Yeah, or somebody's going to get walked.
Sooner or later. But he was in the minor leagues and playing in the Carolina League back then, and 27 up, 27 down. Now, I did kind of – he kind of half-hearted mentioned that the catcher may have let a foul ball fall in so he'd get the chance to strike out the guy. But that was nice. The ninth inning, so the catcher knew what was going on, but he himself didn't know. When he walked off the field after the game, everyone's going crazy, and it's like, what's going on? And they told him, it's like, is that a big deal? Like, it's never happened before in baseball history, any level. And so this man pretty much had a that was his career, kind of more or less. And he's very proud of it. And he did have some tendonitis issues, torn labrum, they found out later on, but they didn't know how to address it back then. So his career was pretty much done. But he tried for 5 or 6 more years to make it back, and he couldn't quite do it.
A true baseball fascist. I bet the game. I bet the final score of that game had to have been like 1-0. The defense was asleep.
I'm not quite sure, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't a blow up by any means. But you know, like he had bad stomach issues. He had ulcers, like beyond belief.
Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't feeling well in the during warm up. And you know, it's like, oh, I don't know if you have, like, you want to play today. And there you went. He went out there and just killed it. So
that's
I love
amazing.
Those stories. Yeah, and he actually wasn't a pitcher when he got signed. He was a first baseman. And because in high school, he threw so hard, he hurt a kid. He beamed him, so he promised himself he would never pitch again. And the coach in the minor league said, well, have you thought about pitching? He's like, no. And he's like, well, you should think about it because you're not going to make the team as a player, as a position player. So he started pitching, and he's like half-hearted throwing. And they're like, you have to have more than that. And then he explained what happened. He's like, you know, once again, if you don't do this, you're cut from the team. Then he let loose and, you know, 100, 101 miles per hour. His curveball was rated one of the top 10 of all time by Baseball Digest. So Koufax, him right there, has top curveballs. So you know, you wonder, like, what would have happened if his arm didn't get damaged? So
right.
That's crazy.
Baseball is full of incredible stories. Like it just is. And I feel like there's this violence just under the surface, right? Where everything's happening, looks calm and collected, everything's fine. But under the surface, if you're paying attention, there's this roiling sort of viciousness. And it's super fascinating to me. But then you take it one step deeper, and that's what your book does. It tells you what's going on in the hearts of the players, what's going on in their heads. You know, and that's another layer of the game. It's so nuanced, and I think your book does a great job of bringing that up.
Well, thank you. Baseball is an incredibly competitive sport, but it's still a team sport, and these players always balance that. I mean, you hit a home run, you're happy for yourself, even if it's a 9-0 game, but you have to balance that with team needs as well, and that's what the good players do.
I love it. I love
Greg, I think you have a question that you can relate to more than me as far as writing about baseball.
Yeah.
Just because we talk about he's doing this.
Yeah. Can we just for a minute talk about how hard it is to write about baseball? And why is that true?
Because like everything else, everybody's going to judge what you do and what you write. Yeah. And there are times where you want to write a certain way or kind of point out certain things, and you have to understand that people have reasons for doing things, and things happen the way they happen, and you can't sugarcoat it sometimes. And that's what I enjoy writing these stories is I don't cover it up. I just kind of put it out there. And if it's received well, it's received well. Like Brian Milner, he had diabetes, and I think it affected his draft stock. Earl Weaver, the manager for the Oreos, after he had a big game against that team, said, well, we knew that and we liked him, but we were concerned he'd break down because he had diabetes. Mm-hmm. And it bothered me a lot more than it bothered him. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, whatever, I don't care. But it bothered me. I'm like, he was managing, he was a great player. Why would it take away from his stock? So yeah. I just kind of put it out there, and he didn't bite on it. He didn't go negative. He didn't get upset. Mm. So I kind of let it go. But nowadays, I think he would be celebrated for playing like that, playing over that. Back then, it was more of a stigma, and he had to kind of get past it and hide it. So
yeah,
that's a long answer to your question.
No, I love it. I'm writing baseball stories right now too, and it's very, very hard. So I feel good hearing that. Yes, it's hard, but there's a way to do it. And it's just strip off the veneer, right? Just let it be what it is. It's just awesome. It's
very
great.
Cool.
Well, where's the best place for our baseball family to find your book?
The book Baseball's Great Expectations can be found on Amazon like everything else. And we're pre-ordering until March 5th. So you can get it by March 5th. And Roman and Littlefield's the publisher. So it's on there. BarnesandNoble.com, Books a Million. And you can go right to my website, tdmonty0.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Facebook and everything else.
Yeah. Baseball family, if you don't know, buying it from the author direct is the best way to go. Like, let's be completely honest.
Absolutely. And I'll sign it and send it out. No problems.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, I'll be pre-ordering mine. I've got a copy, but I want a physical signed copy. Super duh. Right. And we'll put a link in the description, baseball family, so you can go straight there and get yourself a copy as well. And is that the best place we can find Splendid Six as well?
Absolutely. Amazon is the best place. That was a kind of like boutique vanity project I did. But it gave me a great opportunity to write and really flex and enjoy writing. And I did it, and here we go, book number two.
So cool. Very cool. So cool. Congratulations.
No, thank you so much. And I really enjoyed this talk.
Yeah, we did too.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show. This was great. Thanks. And we're going to have you on again.
Awesome.
When you write your next book, for sure.
Well, if you want me to talk to one of the players or two, I can get one of them on as well.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Okay. Awesome.
Excellent.
All right, baseball family. Well, thanks for joining us, and we will be right back. Baseball family, thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed that interview as much as we did, and we really appreciate Patrick joining us. Don't forget to like, subscribe, rate, and review the channel. You can jump on any of the platforms that we're on, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, a whole bunch of others. Whatever. We're going to do live broadcasts starting very soon. Those will be on Thursday night, so stay tuned for that. Don't forget about the mailbag. That's in the description. Don't forget about the newsletter. That's in the description. If you want to talk to us about something, drop us a line. Otherwise, we'll catch you next week.